Okay, so we're going to do something on Purim. And what we're going to do is based on a sicha of the Rebbe. I didn't make copies of parts of the sicha because it's in Yiddish. So I didn't think that would work for everyone. But I took extracts of some of the references and we'll go through that and do the explanation outside. So it's interesting, sicha is actually a sicha in two parts. And I'm just mentioning that because they're connected. The first part is a very interesting halachic analysis of something to do with Purim, which then leads into the Hasidus part of the sicha, right? So I'm not going to go through the whole halachic thing, but we're going to touch on it because it's important to understand it from when we go into the explanation according to Hasidus. So on your handout, I'm going to do a Mishnah. There's a famous Mishnah. It also has more relevance this year. You know, this coming Shabbos is Parsha Zohar. It's the time we read the mitzvah of remembering Amalek and so on. But also happens to be the 11th of Adar, right? Do you know the significance of 11th of Adar? Okay, you will know by the end of the year. I mean, in the beginning already, but you'll know an interesting idea behind it. So we know that Purim is on the 14th of Adar in Yerushalayim. If it's a city that has a wall around it from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, it's on the 15th. That's why Yerushalayim is on the 15th of Adar. And one of the main mitzvahs of Purim, of course, is the reading of the Megillah. So we get introduced to, in the very beginning of Masechet Megillah, to other days that can actually lend itself to reading the Megillah, and we'll see why. So let's see. This is a Mishnah in Megillah, number one. It says, Megillah Nikras, the Megillah can be read sometimes, Be'achadasar on the 11th of Adar, B'shnei Masar on the 12th, B'shloish Os on the 13th, which are three extra days that we never knew about. Be'arba Asar on the 14th, Be'chamisha Asar on the 15th. Lo'y pachos ve'lo yeser, not less and not more. And the Mishnah explains, Krachin ha'mukafim mi'choy mamim mois Yehoshua bin Nun, the cities that have a wall from the time of Yehoshua bin Nun, Kairin b'chamisha Asar. They read the Megillah on the 15th, which is what Yerushalayim does, right? There are places in Eretz Yisrael we're not sure if they had a wall. That's interesting. There are a couple of places in Eretz Yisrael we're not sure if actually 15th to 14th. And some people have like a machmir, they read the Megillah on both days. Okay. Kfarim va'ayoros, little villages and ayoros gedolos, big cities that didn't have a wall from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. Kairin ba'arba asar. They read on the 14th, which is what we do, right? We read Purim on the 14th. Ella, the only thing is, shakforim, the small villages, the shtetlach, in other words, right? Well, like they used to call in South Africa, the dorfi, isn't they call that? Magdimin l'yom ha'knesset. They can bring it forward to the gathering day, the market day, which is a Monday or a Thursday before Purim. And that means that it can be that Purim Megillah can be read on the 11th, the 12th, and the 13th, right? Okay. Let's explain. So let's understand. So it used to be a structure. There used to be a structure where there were big cities and there were shtetlach, which were basically farmlands, right? Where with small towns, there were small communities of Jews. Normally, they weren't centers of learning. They weren't very rabbinic centers or Torah centers. But they were farmers who used to farm the land and work the land, etc. And then they would gather produce. And then they would go into the towns, the big towns, on market days, which happened to be Monday or Thursday. And I say happened to be. The reason why Monday, there's a few reasons why Monday and Thursday are special. But we read the Torah Monday and Thursday, right? Because you're not supposed to go 3 days without really learning Torah. Reading the Torah that came from Moshe Rabbeinu. The reason that it was originally made on Monday and Thursday is because they were market days. And that's where everyone would gather and everyone would be around, right? Okay, so therefore, they would come to the market days and they would sell produce. That's when the people in the big cities would buy their fruits and vegetables and whatever else the little shtetlach could provide for them, right? So what in the times where this was the structure in Israel and this was like the thriving society that they used to have, the rabbis made this thing where you can read the Megillah. If you live in a shtetl, you can read the Megillah on the Monday or the Thursday before Purim. So for example, if Purim would fall on a Sunday, let's say, right? So then you go back 3 days, then the people of the would read it the Thursday before, which would be the 11th of Adar. If it was on Wednesday, they go to Monday. If it was Wednesday, go to Monday, which is the 13th of 12th of Adar. If it was on a Tuesday, we'd do the day before, which would be the 12th of the 13th of Adar, right? And that's why the Mishnah says that Megillah can be read on the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th. Yeah, they wouldn't do it again on the 14th. Okay, so the night's an interesting thing. The night Megillah is not for now, but it's a whole discussion about when it started and how it came about. And it's not the same mitzvah as the daytime. It's different to the daytime. The main Megillah reading is daytime. Yeah. It's a good question what the shtetlach is to do at the night. I don't know. We'll leave that for now. But the main Megillah, which is why, by the way, there's this whole halachic discussion whether by day, you know, we make three brachas before the Megillah. One of them is Shechiyanu, right? There's a big machlokes about whether you make Shechiyanu in the daytime because you've already done Shechiyanu the night before. Shechiyanu is normally the first time, not every time, right? So most people do make Shechiyanu in the daytime. I'm not sure if Sephardim do it. Mostly Ashkenazim do make it in the daytime. The reason is because although we make Shechiyanu in the nighttime because it's a new mitzvah, but the main mitzvah is actually the daytime. That's when we make Shechiyanu again. Okay. Now, let's have a look at Rashi, so we just understand this, and we're going to get into the Sicha about this. Okay, so, Shehakvarim, says Rashi, just taking an excerpt of Rashi, number two, Shehakvarim nostu lehen chachomim rishus, the little villages, the rabbis gave them permission, lahaktim kriyosal yom haknisa, to make their Megillah reading the day of the market. Yom sheini b'shabbos lifnei arba asar, either the Monday before the 14th, or chamishi b'shabbos, or Thursday, shu yom haknisa, which is the right, which is also a market day. Why is that? Because what used to happen, number one, they used to bring produce. Second of all, shakvarim miskansim la'ayores l'mishpat. Also, the villagers would come into the city for any halachic matter. If they had a dispute with someone, a mediation or a shaila, whatever the case is, the fisha bate dinim, because part of this market day thing was that the Beis Din, Yoshvin Ba Yoris, would convene in the cities, B'Sheni B'Chamishi, on Monday and Thursday. Ketakonas Ezra, like Ezra, which was the leader at the beginning of the second Mesamigdosh, he instituted that. Now, also another issue, V'Hakfarim Einam B'Kiin Likrois. The villagers often didn't have someone that knew how to read the Megillah, because they were simpler people, right? And therefore, v'tzrichin sheyikra'enu lehem echob ne'ayir, and therefore we need a city person to read the Megillah for them, right? Therefore, v'lo hitrichum chachomim li'is'acher, the chachomim did not bother them to sort of delay the Megillah, v'lo v'yom arba asar, and to come on the 14th, which isn't a market day, which means they have to come both times. They have to come on Monday and Thursday, and they have to come again on Purim, and that's a big bother. The Gemara talks about it later. It was a reward for them because at the end of the day, they were also the people who used to provide produce for the people in the big city, their fruits and vegetables, and so on and so forth. And therefore, they were rewarded by the fact that they can come the day, they don't have to have the bother of coming again on Purim, but they can come the market day before, the Monday or Thursday before, and hear the Megillah. And therefore, says Rashi, Pa'amim Mishir Maknis Mishloish Asar, or Pa'amim Mishir Achad Asar. Sometimes it's the 13th, sometimes it's the 11th, whatever the case is. So therefore, those are the days. So then we have 5 days, the Megillah can be potentially read. We don't do it nowadays anymore because we don't have that structure of society. And therefore, we keep Purim. But it is relevant to halacha. There is a thing brought in Shulchan Aruch where a person is going on a trip and he's going with a ship, for example, and he doesn't, or he's going with a caravan convoy, which was a very common way of traveling. We had to travel in groups because they used to travel through dangerous areas and so on. Even after this whole thing stopped, and he doesn't have a Megillah to take with him, as before Purim, and they're going before Purim, so he must try read the Megillah at least on the 11th, 12th, or 13th, even though it won't be there on Purim, because we see from the Mishnah it's still a time of a Megillah. Okay. Very good. Now, in the Sicha, the Rebbe first spends a few pages, which we're not going to go through now, I'm just going to touch on it briefly to explain this halachically, and the Rebbe comes up with an interesting theme because he asks a couple of questions on the Mishnah, and so on. But the bottom line is that the Rebbe poses the following halachic perspective, and that is like this. When you say that a person can read the Megillah on the 11th, I mean, we know the time for the Megillah is the 14th or the 15th, depending if it's a walled city or not, right? We have Purim on the 14th, Yerushalayim has on the 15th, but that's the normal time. Obviously, later on, the Chachamim instituted this idea for the villages that you can bring it back to the market day. So it became 11th, 12th, and 13th, but obviously that wasn't the original main time. Although the Gemara does discuss that it was learnt out of various psukim, there are psukim in the Megillah, which kind of infer that there is other times for the Megillah as well, and they learn that out and interpret it in a way where it could include the 11th, 12th, and 13th. But there's two ways to look at it halachically, and I don't want to dwell too much on this, but it's an interesting idea. And that is that 11th, 12th, and 13th remain non-Megillah reading days. It's just that they're not really Megillah days. But the rabbi said that certain people can fulfill the mitzvah of Megillah on those days. In other words, it's more about the person. The person, I can read the Megillah if I'm a village person on a non-Megillah day. Or we can look at it differently. We can look at it that the rabbis instituted that three more days were added, which became Megillah days. You follow what I'm saying? They became Megillah days. Not just that I could read it on a non-Megillah day. They became, for me, a Megillah day. It's like a really, it's the energy of the Megillah, the halachic status of the day, like the 14th and 15th, which is a Megillah day, become also Megillah days. Right? And the Rebbe goes through a whole process, which I'm not going to go in now, to actually prove that that's the case. And that's why the Mishnah begins with the 11th, and it says Megillah Nikras, Megillah can be read, because the Mishnah is teaching us that it's, they're Megillah days. They become Megillah days. Okay. That's the gist of the halachic part of the Sikha. Then the Rebbe says like this, and this is what we want to focus on. What we're going to see is interesting significance about the 11th, or bring it early to the 11th. And we're also going to connect it to the Shabbos. That's our chosen for this year, this Sikha, because it was also said in a year where the Shabbos before Purim is the 11th, right? So Purim falls on a Tuesday, the Shabbos falls the 11th. So the Shabbos begins that journey of those 5 days, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th. And it's also the Shabbos coincides with Parashat Zohar when we read the mitzvah, we listen to the portion about wiping out Amalek, right? Okay. So we're going to bring it all together in the most fascinating way. And he starts like this. He says that we have this concept that we take days that really originally are not Megillah days, right? That wasn't part of the original mandate, so to speak, of Tanakh, right? And we make it in to Megillah days, which is something we don't find by other Chagim, right? There's nothing we find all of a sudden that Pesach gets extended to a non-Pesach day. That's not such a thing. Or on Shavuos, anything, right? So it's because, says the Rebbe, that this actually is the essence of the whole way that Purim worked. And he quotes a very fascinating Gemara. So just to give you the background. So we know Purim takes place in a time when there was still a Sanhedrin. A central Sanhedrin. Mordechai was part of the Sanhedrin. Okay, the Sanhedrin had shifted to Persia or to Babylonia or whatever. Then it went back to Eretz Yisrael when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. In fact, not only Sanhedrin, Purim takes place during the period of what we call Anshei Knesset HaGadoila, the men of the Great Assembly, which were the 120 men, which went into the second Beis HaMikdash. Mordechai was part of it. Ezra was led by Ezra. Ezra took us back to Eretz Yisrael for the second Beis HaMikdash. And that was a major turning point in history. A lot of the stuff that we have today is all from them. All the brachas we make, the structure of tefillah, everything comes from Anshei Knesset HaGadoila. Nevertheless, and they made mitzvahs. For example, they made the mitzvahs of davening in the way we do it today. They made the mitzvah of brachas. They made, the mitzvah of halal even, right? And they made Purim. But Purim was made very differently. Purim didn't come about like top down. Didn't come about, the Sanhedrin convened. They said, Purim was a great story. Time to write the Megillah. Make a part of Tanakh and we'll make the festival of Purim. It actually didn't happen like that. It happened from a non-Sanhedrin member. Who was that? Esther. Let's read the Gemara together. Fascinating Gemara. Number three. Omar Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda tells us what happened after after Megillah, after Purim story, Sholcha lahem Esther lachachamim. The Esther wrote to the, she sent a message to the Sanhedrin. Kivuni ledoiris. This day of Purim, establish it for all generations. Make it into a yontif. And there was resistance. Sanhedrin had reasons why they didn't want to make it. The Gemara goes, the whole thing, I'm not going to go into now. That maybe it's not a good idea. They were still in exile. Don't forget, one of the things of Purim is we know that even after Purim, there was no redemption. They were still subject of Persia. They thought maybe it's not going to be so simple. They're just going to be a thorn in the eyes of the enemies. Maybe it's not such a good idea to do. And she gave an argument back. Eventually, they agreed. So not without a struggle, okay? They were the only ones that had the power to do this. And she said, and it came from her. Then, says the Gemara, an amazing thing. Sholcha Esther l'chachamim. Esther sent another message to the Sanhedrin. Kisvuni l'doiris. Write it down for the generations. Make it the story part of Tanakh. Which would require them to write it down. It would require them, who were great prophets and great sages, to have Ruach HaKodesh and to write a book according to the divine inspiration to make a part of Tanakh. It's an incredible thing. Esther is the, Hanukkah is very different. Hanukkah is not part of Tanakh. Hanukkah was after the whole, there's an expression in the Gemara, the Esther Soif Kol HaNisim. Esther was the end of all miracles. Doesn't mean the end of all miracles, the miracles after Esther. Plenty of miracles, there's still miracles today, but different kinds, but the, right? Means it was the first miracle, it was the last miracle to be part of Tanakh. To be part of Torah Shabbat itself. Who did it come from? Not top down. It came from Esther. And she got resistance. What was resistance? Resistance was like this. They quoted a pasuk which seemed to say that you can't write Esther down. You can't make a part of Tanakh. It's a great story, but you can't make a part of Tanakh. Why not? Because at the end of the day, Esther is one of the stories of the Tanakh that is about Amalek. Haman comes from Amalek, as you know, right? Mm-hmm. So that's called Haman Ho'agagi because he was the king Agag, who Shaul HaMelech, King Saul, when he fought against Amalek in the beginning, before the first Pesach Mikdash even, he made the mistake of leaving one individual alive, which was the king, and he gave birth to the rest of Amalek, and that's why we have the story of Purim, right? That's the Haftorah of this week's Parsha. Yeah? And that's in Nevi'im, that's in the prophets, and it's in the book of Shmuel. So like this. So they said, Sholchullah, they sent a message back. There's a pasuk that alludes to the story of Amalek being written down three times. And they said it's already three times written. Why? Once in Parshas Beshalach, in the story when Amalek attacked the Jewish people in when they were coming out of Egypt. And that's, we read that on Purim morning from the Torah. And then there's the Parsha which we read this week, Parsha Zohar, excuse me, which is the paragraph in Devarim, which gives us the mitzvah of remembering what Amalek did to us and giving us the commandment to wipe them out. And then the story of Shmuel and Shaul fighting Amalek was written. So they said, that's it, three times. The pasuk says three times. I wrote it for you three times, the pasuk says. Shilei Shimeloi Reveim, 3,000, not four times. Achamatsu Lachamikra Kosuba Torah until back and forth. They identified a pasuk in the Torah which says, Ksoiv Zoi Zikorin Basefer. That says you should write Amalek down as a remembrance in the book. Which book? The book of the Chumash. Which Ksoiv Zois means, they interpreted it a bit different. Ksoiv Zois, they should write it, Zikorin for remembering, Basefer in a book. They said, Ksoiv Zois, to write it down actually means Mashakosuv Kanav Mishnah Torah, what's written in Beshalach and in Devarim. So in other words, they decided, no, what's written in Beshalach and Devarim is really once. In other words, the Torah really wanted it three times in each section of the Torah, Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. So the Torah is Parshas Beshalach and Parshas Zohar. Twice, which is considered once. Zikorain, to remember it, is Mashakosuv in Nevi'im, what's written in the prophets. That's Bashaul HaMelech. The story of him, his war against the Amalek, and he left over at Agag. And Basefer, the book, is the Megillah. Right? With me? Mm-hmm. In other words, the whole Purim story, both the observance of Purim and the fact that Megillah is part of the Tanakh, came not from above, came from below. came from Esther. Okay, Esther was great Tzedekus, but she wasn't part of the Sanhedrin. Right? And she had to bring it up. She had to think. In other words, and not only that, it became one of the greatest books. The Ravid says, it was the contemporary of the Rambam, that even if the other books of Tanakh were to cease happening, Megillah would never cease. The Rambam says that all the festivals, right, the famous thing, the Rambam says all the festivals of Mashiach comes will be abolished. It doesn't mean it will be mamash abolished, but become insignificant. That's one of the commentaries of it, right? Except for Purim. Purim has this incredible power, right? Now, what this leads into, and this is what he's going to continue, is this fact, this concept. The fact is, Purim, on the surface, is a time of tremendous darkness and tremendous lowliness in a spiritual way, right? That's when it happened, that's when it took place. And yet it's the greatest yontif, the deepest yontif, because it comes from the darkest place, right? Yeah, you with me? The one of the ways of putting it, framing it just as introduction to what he's about to say, is that to penetrate the darkness that was around when Purim was there, to have Hashem reverse the gezeira, the decree, in such a terrible time, to have a ness, a miracle that took place when the Yidden were not on a very high spiritual level. They were subject to a decree that was going to annihilate them completely. They had assimilated, they sinned with the whole meal of Achashverosh and so on and so forth. And yet to have the connection of the B'nai Yisrael Hashem reestablished to such an unbelievable degree was only because it was the deepest connection, the essence of Hashem, right? We almost gave a whole shiur in this. I'm not going to go through it because it's a very complicated idea in Hasidus, but the idea basically is that there's the different levels of relationship between us and Hashem, right? The deepest relationship between us and Hashem comes from the idea of Bechira, choosing, which means when He chooses us in a way that it doesn't make sense necessarily, it transcends logic, which is why Purim is called Purim, because of the lottery. Lottery doesn't mean, lottery on the surface means randomness, but actually it doesn't mean randomness in a deep way. It means something that is just way beyond Seichel. In other words, like this. When Yidden are doing the right thing, when there's revelation, when Hashem says, I want to take you out of Mitzrayim because I promised it Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that doesn't represent the deepest relationship between us and Hashem. There's a certain logic to it. There's a certain rationale to it, right? But when we actually are not deserving of Hashem's relationship at all, which was the situation in Purim, right? And it was a time of tremendous darkness, tremendous concealment. We were in Golus. We had assimilated. We were under a threat of complete annihilation. It was a terrible time, a time of tremendous darkness. And in that darkness, the relationship between Ayidna and Hashem was established. That can only be established in a way that makes no sense. And when we say of our relationship that makes no sense, that comes from the highest place. It comes from Hashem's essence, where He transcends light and darkness. He transcends good and bad. There is no good and bad there. There is no light and darkness there. Hashem can be anything. And yet He chooses, because He has an essential connection to us at the very deepest level, He chooses us. Like there's a famous, just to explain a bit more, there's a famous pasuk in Tanakh, which we have in one of the haftorahs, which says, Haleoch Esav LeYaakov. Aleoch Esav LeYaakov. There's Esav and Yaakov are brothers. But V'oyev Es Yaakov, I love Yaakov and I hate Esav. What does that mean? What do we mean, brothers? In other words, like this. There are three levels of our relationship with Hashem. There's a level where we're doing the right thing and everything is going well. That's a level where Esav and Yaakov are not brothers. Clearly, Yaakov is better than Esav. On a rational level, we're doing more, we're better people, and so on and so forth, right? Then there's a Madrega where suddenly there's no difference, where Esau and Yaakov are the same. We've messed up, there's no rational reason, so what's Esau and Yaakov brothers? And Hashem says, when you have a situation where Haleoch Esau and Yaakov, Esau and Yaakov are brothers, that's where you can reveal, specifically at the darkest level, where Esau and Yaakov seem completely equal, At that level, you can have the revelation of the greatest choosing of Yidden, not because they're good, but because Hashem chose them. Yeah, we good so far? So it seems, yes, that's what it says. The Alter Rebbe in the Kotei Torah. The Alter Rebbe in the Kotei Torah says more than that. The Alter Rebbe in the Torah says that it was such an awakening, but an awakening came from them, not an awakening came from the low people, right? That's why Yom Kippur and Purim are related, by the way. That's why Purim, Yom Kippur also, there was lottery drawn in the Beis Hamikdash, because tshuva works the same way. How does tshuva work? How do we have the opportunity to do tshuva? We're supposed to listen to Hashem. What happens when we mess up? So we can't fix it. You broke it. Well, it's unfixable. Unless we reveal a deeper relationship between us and Hashem, where we can reveal that part that Hashem loves us anyway, which is the deepest level of relationship between us and Hashem, right? When that happens, then we can start to repair afterwards. We can reveal that relationship. Hashem is still our Father, and then we start to do tshuva, right? Yes, yeah, so Alter Rebbe says a famous thing in the Kotei Torah, where actually, you know, the story of Purim didn't happen in a way where Haman wasn't hanged on Purim, you know that, right? Haman was hanged almost a year before Purim, the story. Just very quickly, just in case you're not clear, we've gone through this a few times. Sorry? Oh, okay. So yeah, so Haman makes a decree. When did he make this decree? It was the month of Nisan. He got angry with Mordechai, the month of Nisan, right? Okay, let me run through this. It's a very important timeline to be aware of. He makes a decree, he's going to annihilate the Jewish people. He gets Ahasuerus to agree. He draws lots. What do the lots say? That next year on the 13th of Adar, which is almost a year from when he did it, right? Almost 12 months, minus a few days. They're going to wage war. Everyone can take up arms and kill all Jews. Everyone jumps into the thing, and Mordechai hears about it. He's doing sackcloth, calling Jews to do tshuva. And Esther wants to know what's going on. She explains, and she says, you got to go to the king, and you got to take care of this. So she says, yes, but you didn't have to do tshuva, so you got to get everyone to fast first, in Shushan at least, because there wasn't, yeah? And then I'm going to try the parties. And when did the parties happen? Pesach time, long before everything, right? The second day, Pesach, is when the second party happens. And when she exposes Haman, and the king gets angry at Haman, he says, hang him, right? See, Haman's yahrzeit is the second day of Pesach. The problem is, Ahasuerus says, I can't rescind the decree. That was Persian law. Once the decree is signed, you can't rescind it. I can make another decree that the Jews can also take up arms and fight back. So you have to understand, the Jews were under threat for an entire year. And anti-Semitism doesn't completely disappear. The Megillah does say a lot of people converted because they were scared of the Jews. But a lot of people didn't. There was a war. There was a very big war. And the Jews, says the Alter Rebbe, actually had a way out. The decree was only against Jews. They could have converted. And the Alter Rebbe says that no Jew, not only didn't convert, but no Jew even had a also, Machshobtam says, they didn't even think about the idea. They didn't even entertain the idea. Right? From the lowest of Jews who had gone to Ahasuerus' party and did the wrong thing. Because that was the connection that was revealed in the darker times. But it came from above. That's why the Gemara says, it doesn't bring us in the Sikh, but that's why the Gemara says the famous idea, right? That when it came Matan Torah, when it came the giving of the Torah, so to speak, the Jews were considered like they were forced into it. Chassidus explains, they weren't mamash forced, but they were overwhelmed with love from Hashem, and it was irresistible. Hashem made it, he made him like it was like a shidduch, but it was like he became irresistible. We couldn't say no. But Purim was different. Purim, they re-accepted the Torah without any revelation. They recommitted in complete darkness. That's what's the deepest yontif. So, That's got to do with the fact that even the way Purim came about works like that. It wasn't even something done by the Sanhedrin. It was something done from the Jew. Esther sent a message with resistance. Let's make Purim. Let's write it down. All coming from her. Okay. This now goes to another thing with Purim, which we've talked about before. And then I'm going to go back to the 11th and 12th and all that. And that is that there's no name of Hashem in the Megillah, as we know. Simple reason, on the surface, the reason is because it was a time of darkness and had to do with the darkness because they didn't want to put any name of Hashem because the Megillah was a story that was actually written down and recorded in the Chronicles of Persia as well, as we say at the end of the Megillah. And we didn't want them taking the story, which they knew about at the time, and using that for their historic documents, but replacing the name of Hashem with their gods. So we didn't do it. That's on a surface. But Chassidus explains it's much deeper than that. The reason there's no name of Hashem in the Megillah is because we know that Hashem has a name. Hashem has different names, and they represent different manifestations of Hashem, different levels of Hashem. Yud-Kei Vav-Kei is the revelation of Hashem, Elokim is more the Tzimtzum, and so on. But every name, including Hashem, is not Hashem's essence. Because every name is a description, and when you describe Hashem, even the most infinite, transcendent terms, it's still you're describing something. Hashem's essence is beyond all description. Purim was a yontav where Hashem's essence was revealed. Like we have in our Aseres Hadibros and Ten Commandments where it says three words, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha. So Chassidus explains, I am Hashem, your God. There's Hashem, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. There's Elokecha, which is Elokim, which is a lower level. But then before that, there's Anoichi. Anoichi, no name. I am who I am. That's the essence of Hashem, right? So that was revealed in Purim. Yeah? Which is, we've talked about this before, there's no name of Hashem. That's why it's called Megillas Esther. Esther comes from the word to hide, because the name of Hashem is hidden in the Megillah. But, Siddhis explains, there's two ideas of hiding. There's hiding when there's a block on revelation. That's what we normally call Tzimtzum, where it's darkness. But then there's an essential hiddenness, which is Hashem's essence, also called hiding. He transcends revelation. He can't be grasped at that level. And that's the level which was connected to. Right? Why? Because it's the essence of Hashem that connects to the lowest levels. When there's the connecting with the lowest of the low, that's when Hashem's essence can connect. Because it's choosing Yaakov, even though that makes no sense. It's complete transcendence. Okay, now let's go to understanding the Mishnah. Go back to understanding the Mishnah. And again, we'll understand the depth of why this became a thing, where there should be Purim, not only on Purim, but we should make other days part of Purim as well. And we start with the Yud Aleph, the 11th, the 12th, the 13th, and they are reserved for the villages. So the Rebbe explains the following based on Chassidus, and says the following. We find in this Mishnah there are three types of people. There are the people that live in the villages, right? There are people who live in the cities, and there are people who live in the walled cities. Walled cities lead in the 15th, very high madrigas, we're going to see. The city people, 14th, regular Purim, and then the villagers read 11th, 12th, and 13th sometimes, right? And it becomes Megillah days as well. He says, what are these three? So in Chassidus it says that these three divisions of people represent three types of Yidden. The people who live in the walled cities, those are the people that represent complete spiritual protection. They are tzaddikim. The righteous tzaddikim, they understand Hashem. They're one with Hashem. They really, really high tzaddikim. And that's why that's the wall. They're completely protected. Not only they do Torah mitzvahs, but they don't even have a problem. There's no temptation even. They, right? You know, every day in davening, we talk about the angels. This is a part of davening, I talk about the angels, right? So we talk about Srofim. Those are very, very high angels that belong to the world of Bria. And they are very calm angels, and they praise Hashem in a very calm way. Then we talk about Ofanim and Chayas HaKodesh. Bera'ash Godol. They praise Hashem with a great noise, right? And what do they say? Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimakoymoy. Blessed be Hashem from His original place. They are lower level. Why? What a lower level? The noise represents struggle. Tanya explains, a person is an unbelievable tzaddik who's one with Hashem, who has no yetzahara, no temptation, is a very calm person. He doesn't have a struggle. He has love of Hashem, but it's a love that's natural. It's just pleasure. It's more than love. It's like he just basks in the glory of Hashem all the time. There's no noise, because no struggle. It's just complete delight, complete pleasure, right? The other malachim are like this. So that's the city with the walls. The city without the wall, but still a big city, represents a prominent person. He lives in the city. So he's a city person, right? Doesn't have to struggle like, doesn't, in other words, doesn't have to physically struggle, which represents, doesn't have to spiritually struggle. Like the person who's in the village, like he doesn't have to plow the field, doesn't have to plant the seeds, doesn't have that struggle. He just has to cook the meal. He gets ready food, right? But it's not quite, it doesn't mean he's not quite protected. And that's why that represents a person who is a lower level, but still on the path, right? And then he explains that that's what's got to do with the spiritual worlds, because the Srafim are belong to the world of understanding. They just get Hashem, they grasp Hashem. The world of the city person is a person who doesn't quite get it, but he's very emotional. He has to struggle emotionally. So he has to work on the love, he has to work on the kindness, to work on the emotion, but gets there, feels the love, feels the emotion, but it's noisy already. The main noise is the villager. Again, physically represented, symbolized by the fact that a villager has to work really hard. You don't get anything. You want food, you got to start plowing the field. The field, again, is the earth representing the lowest form of existence. You got to plow it, you got to plant, you got to water. It's a whole business. And it's a much lower level. Right? It's a much lower level. And that's the person on the lower level that what we call ofanim and chayas hakodesh in davening, berash gadol, making a tremendous noise, because it's a struggle, it's a real struggle. And they don't, even with the struggle, they don't reach amazing levels. They just meet a connection on their level. They're trying. They're doing mitzvahs. They're learning Torah. But they don't have this tremendous full-blown love for Hashem. They don't have this tremendous insight and grasping of Hashem. It's just a simple Jew struggling away to keep Torah mitzvahs. But committed. Kabbalah's oil. Will do what's right. Committed to do what's right. And that's the person that reaches the highest level. Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimakoimoy. Blesses the glory of Hashem from his original place. Right? They reach the essence of Hashem. The Mesiras Nefesh, the commitment, without loving and without fearing and without great intellectual, yes, they learn. Of course we have to learn. Yes, you have to build some sort of love just to fuel that commitment, but that's not the main focus of their service of Hashem. The main focus is the commitment to do. Yeah? That's the villager. And that's the villager that can take an 11th of Adar and turn it into a Megillah. Turn into Megillah Day, which is the real essence of what Purim is all about. And that's why we start that. Now it goes further, it goes more than that. Now you can listen to this unbelievable stuff. Hold on a second. Oh, so it's like this. This is connected with two things. This whole idea. First of all, it's connected with the fact that this Shabbos is Parshas Tetzaveh. This sikh was said in a similar year like now. Right? This week is Parshas Tetzaveh, and it's also Parshas Zohar, right? That happens every couple of years, where Purim's on a Tuesday, Shabbos is Tetzaveh, and Parshas Zohar. It connects all this together. What's Tetzaveh? Tetzaveh is the only Parsha from Parshas Shmois until Devarim that doesn't have Moshe Rabbeinu's name. You aware of that concept? Yeah? Why? Because when the Jews sinned with the Egel Azov, Moshe Rabbeinu was in the mountain, and he told Hashem, you better forgive the Jewish people. If you don't forgive the Jewish people, take me out of your book. Mecheni no mesifrecho, wipe me out of your book. Take me out of the Chumash. And Hashem did forgive the Jewish people, but yet what a tzaddik says is always has an effect, and therefore Hashem took him out of one parsha, ve'atat tzav. And the Rebbe asked the question, it seems like this is like really a patch, it's like a slap in the face from Moshe Rabbeinu, right? It's like the one parsha that, and always comes in, you know, today's Zayin Adar, right? Moshe Rabbeinu's birthday and Yahrzeit. And it's like Dafka this week, where Moshe Rabbeinu gives like this, I took you out of the Chumash, right? But Chassidus explains not like that. Chassidus explains, this is the deepest parsha of Moshe Rabbeinu. Doesn't have Moshe Rabbeinu's name. But yet, how does the parsha start off? Ve'ata tetzaveh. Ata tetzaveh means, and you will command the whole, you, not your name, you. Because a tzaddik is like a tzaddik, tzaddikim are compared to Hashem, it's the same thing. The Rebbe has a very long sikha, they're talking about this, which I'm not going to go into now, but the essence of it is what he says here. And that is Moshe Rabbeinu has a name. Moshe Rabbeinu, what's Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu, our teacher, he gave us the Torah. But what's Moshe Rabbeinu's, and that's the description of Moshe Rabbeinu. What's Moshe Rabbeinu's essence? To fight for a Yid, the leader of every single Jew, even the Jew that has served the golden calf. And that's why this is the parasha where Moshe Rabbeinu's name is taken out, because his essence is revealed. V'ato, just you, not your name, you, means the essence of you. Similar to the Megillah, doesn't have Hashem's name. But getting back to Parasha Zohar, so here, now we have to come to a number of little things. So the Shaloh HaKodesh says, listen to this. The Shaloh HaKodesh says on the Mishnah we just learned, right? That starts with 11 and ends with 15. Says the Shalah, the two ends, 11 and 15, are connected to Hashem's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei. So Yud and Hey, we know that Hashem's name is split into two. There's Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey. What's Yud and Hey? Gematria? 15. That's the last day of the Megillah. What's Vav and Hey? 11, the first day of the Megillah. So this thing in Megillah can be said 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 has got to do with Hashem's name. 11 at the beginning, 15 at the end. Now, listen to this. Haman is all about Amalek, right? Amalek, we know, is evil. It's what we said, we are commanded to wipe out Amalek, the whole thing. What was Amalek? So we find a very interesting thing. Just look at number four of your thing. We find in Parshas B'Shalach, when Amalek first attacked the Jewish people, and Hashem said, you've got to write it down, and this is going to be an eternal war, and Hashem swore, so to speak, he took an oath that we're going to fight Amalek in every generation until we're going to wipe them out. We still haven't done completely, but yeah. See, look at the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Vayomer ki yod al keisko. The hand of Hashem, so to speak, is al keis. Case same word as kisei, the chair. Hashem's name was sort of holding his chair, so to speak. Ka, which means Hashem, but only has half of Hashem's name. You see that? Yud and Hey. Yeah? Milchama la Hashem ba'amalek. This is an oath that it's going to be a war for Hashem against Amalek, midor dor in every generation. So it's a funny pasuk. It talks about Hashem's throne, but it leaves out an aleph. It talks about Hashem's name and only has half Hashem's name. Correct? So Chazal tell us, Ein Hashem Sholem. Ein Kisoy Sholem. Hashem's throne will never be complete. And his name will never be complete until Amalek is wiped out. Right? What does that mean, Bruchnius? We have to, today, we don't fight the physical Amalek, we've got to fight the spiritual Amalek. What is the spiritual Amalek? The spiritual Amalek is a force which comes. So we know. Sorry. First of all, what's the difference? What's the makeup of Hashem's name? So we know in Chassidus, Yud-Kei is holier than Vav-Kei, right? In a way, Yud-Kei is Chochmah and Bina. It's the highest level, the full understanding and grasping of Hashem. Vav and Hey, Vav is six midas, and Hey is Malchus. It's got to do with actually getting it done. Putting what you understand into practice, right? Chassidus tells us that Amalek, we apply this expression to Amalek, Yoideya Eshiboinai. Amalek is a force which understands Hashem. There's no problem learning about Hashem. But he still wants to rebel against Hashem. What's Amalek? Amalek's mission is to lessen our enthusiasm, to give us complacency, to make us apathetic towards Hashem, so that we don't put it into practice. Amalek is about separating Hashem's name. It's about separating Yud-Kei from Vav-Kei. Right? In fact, the word Amalek comes from that. The word Molak, Mem Lamad Kuf, comes from a word in Chumash, which is talked about, it's a bit gory, but it's talked about the sacrifices that were brought from birds. That they weren't shechted in the normal way, you know that. It says they were actually, their head was taken off with a nail, Molak. Molak is like separation between the head and the body. And that's Amalek. Amalek is to separate the head and the body. You might come to a shir, you might learn, you might understand. Amalek says, okay, very nice, but just don't get it done. Right? And Hashem is not complete. The essence of Hashem will never be revealed until we bring it down to the lowest level, which is Purim, the fight against Amalek. By bringing it down, Hashem, into action, which is the lowest form of human expression. Not intellect, not even emotion, but till the last day. That's why the Megillah Nikra says the Chumash, says the Mishnah. The Megillah can be read, and in fact, that's the essence of the Megillah when it's read on the 11th, Vav-Kei. We have to read the Megillah on Yud-Kei also, on the 15th and on the 14th, and we do the full era. But there was a thing where you can take the 11th, which is the villager, which is the lowest form of the year, and that's where you bring it down. And what's the villager? The villager doesn't understand so much the Gemara. He doesn't understand the but what's the villager? Mesiras Nefesh. Committed to do another mitzvah, to bring it down, to do what's needed in behavior. So to keep Shulchan Aruch, to bring a mitzvah down to to this world, to bring Hashem into this physical world. That's when the essence of Hashem is revealed, and that's Megillah Nikras. The Megillah can be read on the 11th. That's the Vovke, and that's the Chiddush of this Mishnah. And that's the Chiddush of Purim. Purim is, that's why Purim is higher than Yom Kippur. Kippur is holier, but Purim is deeper. Because Purim is when it's not a Yontif, and it's not detaching from the world to swim in the spiritual world, like Yom Kippur is. Kippur also reveals the essence of Eid, but this is much deeper, where we have a regular day, and we bring Hashem into the regular day, in food and in drink, but all not so much about, it's a mistake that Purim is about partying, it's about tremendous happiness, but it's revealing the ultimate simcha, which is to connect to Hashem in whatever you do, even in behavior, even where you eat, even where you drink, even where you sleep, all these things. And that's the essence of Purim. Okay?